Good morning, and the conversation continues as we ease on into WIP Sunday. My name's Peter Solomon, and a chilly WIP Sunday it's going to be. Many people are concerned, will they have enough money at the end of their life to live comfortably and happily? Well, that's a concern that a lot of people do, in fact, have, and that's one we're going to try and address this morning as we welcome Gary Stone. Gary is an author and a stock market analyst. He's been investing, research, and coaching in the stock market for over 25 years. He founded the Share the Wealth Systems in 1995 and has empowered and trained everyday people to have a better life through investing in the stock market. Good morning, Gary Stone.
Good morning, Peter. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
My pleasure. There's an old saying, though, and I wonder what you think about whether it applies to the stock market. What goes up must inevitably come down. What do you think?
It certainly does. I certainly go along with that, there is a way of investing in the stock market where it's, whilst it does come down, it'll go up again. And in fact, we'll get into a bit more detail, I'm sure, but investing in a stock market index is actually rigged to go up and to continue going up in the long term.
All right, then let's define a term. What's the stock market index?
Okay, so a stock market index is a generic term. It's an average, so it represents what the average of these of all the stocks are in the stock market, how it's performing. So whether it's going up or down, and by how much it's going up or down by. So the most well known indices are the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and it's called average, and so it's an average of what the overall stock market's doing. And, of course, the other two well-known indices are the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 or NASDAQ Composite Index, and they represent the average of what the stock market's doing.
And who is this little person or persons who sit in an office somewhere figuring out these averages?
Well, that's a fantastic question, and one that's I'm not asked very often, but effectively, let's talk about the S&P 500 because it's probably the most representative average of the stock market. It's effectively a methodology run by S&P, Standard & Poor, Dow Jones Indices, and they've got a methodology which is publicly available on their website, and it's about a four-page document, and you can download that and have a look at it. And it's actually a pretty, I'll use the term mechanical process that they go through. And the S&P 500 is a market capitalized weighted index. So that means that the top 500 stocks by market capitalization, and I'll define market capitalization in a moment, but the top 500 stocks make up the S&P 500, hence 500. And the one that has the largest market capitalization, which is Apple at the moment, gets the largest weighting, and then as the market capitalization decreases to stock number 500 by market capitalization, they get less and less weighting, and effectively it's a weighted average, and so if Apple has a really good day, or Microsoft and Amazon, which are three very big heavyweights in the market, when they do well, then that kind of pushes the average up by a bit more because they have a bigger weighting on the index. So that's what an index does, and it's been representative of the stock market for more than 100 years now, and it's an accepted average of how the stock market's doing, whether it's going up or down.
Okay. A stock can be going along doing very well. All right, let's use a couple of examples, and I don't know if it's fair to pick them out, but I'm going to. One being Exxon.
Correct.
And another one being Samsung. All right? And things can be going well, and then suddenly a tanker that belonged to Exxon springs a leak and becomes an environmental disaster, and down goes the stock. Or Samsung doing very well till their phones start catching fire. Again, can't something unknown really mess up your life in terms of the stock market?
Absolutely, and so the market is a cauldron of uncertainty and insecurity. We cannot foretell the future, and So what people try and do, and what professionals try and do, and even non-professionals, everyday mum and dads try and do, is pick stocks. And that's been the way for decades, if not centuries, of compiling a portfolio in of a mixture of different stocks, and trying to pick ones that would be, because you can't invest in the whole stock market, so people pick a subset of stocks to try and do better than the market, or at least match the market. But what the research has shown now for many years, and particularly in the last 10 to 15 years, is that actively trying to pick stocks, certainly people may have some success, or even professionals and active mutual funds may have some success in the short term over a few months or a few years. But what the research is showing is that over the long term, of periods 10 years and longer, that there are very, very few individuals or indeed active mutual funds that match, let alone beat, the stock market index. So that four-page methodology, if you like, that I mentioned earlier, that S&P used to pick the S&P 500, is probably one of the best methodologies going for many decades, if not centuries now, of getting a good, getting the best return over the long term.
Okay. A lot of us, though, don't get the kind of financial education you've been lucky enough to have. A lot of us just don't understand a whole lot about what's going on. How do you suggest we proceed to build that wealth?
And that's exactly why I wrote the book, and what the book's content is about, is that the stock market, the people who have been the custodians of investing money in the stock market, the majority of the investing money are the active mutual funds, the mutual funds, and there's trillions of dollars invested with these guys, and they have through advertising and writing in newspapers and on TV and discussions and everything, projected an image of investing in the stock market being extraordinarily risky, extraordinarily difficult, and certainly not the domain of the everyday investor or mum and dad to be venturing into, because it's just so difficult. And to a degree, that is correct. But one of the main reasons that they project that picture, if you like, is to try and get people to give up before they even start, and to say, give me your money. I'm an active mutual fund. We are professionals. We know what we're doing. But by the way, because it's so hard and so difficult, we have to charge you these exorbitant fees. Now, in years gone by, the fees were kind of paid up by the people because they didn't really have an alternative. But in the last 15 to 20 years, and there's been an alternative way of investing that's now come about on the stock market, which is called an index exchange-traded fund, which has simplified the process of investing in the stock market astronomically. It is a game changer that allows everyday people, everyday investors, to get access to the stock market and reduce the risk and reduce the uncertainty of investing in stocks that could go to zero or delist or crash or whatever, just because unknown uncertainties that people can't foresee happen in the stock market. So this beast called an index ETF, an index exchange traded fund, which matches the index that we spoke about earlier, has simplified the process enormously.
In this simplification
does
of process, yes. In this simplification of process, though, do I need a stockbroker, or can I do one of these trades that you hear about? You can do yourself as long as you have a computer.
Yeah, well, as long as you don't need to have a stockbroker. You have to have a dealer broker, an online account, but you don't need to be talking to a person. And this is what liberates people, because the process of talking to a broker it opens up the opportunity of being talked into doing something or talked out of doing something. And the stock market is a place where there are so many variables that affect different stocks and different avenues of investing, that there's enough information or enough variables that anybody who's quick-witted or quick on his tongue would be able to convince somebody to do or not to do something. So the process of going via a human being that you talk to on a phone could talk you out of, if you had a plan, sticking to your plan, whereas if you do it via an online mechanism, via an online broker, and all the major brokerages have online facilities, if you like, where they don't have to talk. Fidelity, Charles Schwab, First Trade is not probably one of the biggest, but they're out there. Scott Trade, it's all online. And the fantastic thing about some of the broker-dealers is that you can actually trade or buy into. I'm not suggesting you trade a lot, but we can talk a bit about the strategy in a moment. But you can actually do it commission-free. So there are some ETFs, index ETFs, that we can talk about where it costs you $0 to buy and sell these. So, and it only takes a few minutes once you've got your accounts and everything set up to actually do them.
Well, that's exciting to hear, because just the way you describe some brokers, and not all, but some brokers probably could leave the market and go sell used cars. They have the same skills.
Absolutely. And again, I do stress it's not all. It's some. There's certainly, and I don't believe in probabilities of one or zero, so I'm not going to suggest there's a sample of 100% of brokers out there that you talk to that would be like this, but at the end of the day, they make their money when their clients transact. When their clients buy and sell is when brokers get paid. So there is an incentive for them to get people to buy and sell. The more often they convince people to buy and sell, whether they, it doesn't matter which end of the trade they're on, that's when they get paid. So whereas if you are running the show, you're doing it yourself, and you have a decision support system that helps you execute a plan that you worked out beforehand. So when you go into the market, you're not knee-jerk reacting to what's happening in a particular situation. You're doing it according to a plan. Then it's up to you. You make the decisions. And you're not going to get talked into it or out of it. So it definitely has liberated the process of active investing for individual and everyday investors.
Now, I have an old maxim my father taught me that I'd be interested in your reaction to. Never invest money you can't afford to lose. What do you say?
I wouldn't say invest, but I would say certainly don't trade with money you can't afford to lose. But investing is, unfortunately, the only way that, and when I use invest and trade, I mean I'm talking about time frame here. Trading is typically a more active, pastime where you're doing quite a lot of trades in a month or a year, whereas investing is something that you want it to be as low effort and near passive as possible. So I would say that we don't have a choice. We actually have to invest. And the stock market is one of the main investing avenues. So we don't, we have to, I think, all engage it to some degree. People, and this is where I say, anybody who has a 401k is by default an investor, because they are putting away money for the long term into a 401k, and the majority of that money is being invested in the stock market. It's just that most of the time they're not doing it. It's being done by a bunch of people who are managing the money, but ultimately that money finds its way, or a large chunk of it finds its way into an active mutual fund. And this is what I'm trying to open up people's eyes to, is that rather do it yourself and not put it into an active mutual fund, but invest the money into an index exchange-traded fund, because the odds are far greater over the long term that you're going to do better than what your 401k would do and what the active mutual fund would do.
And you're listening to WIP Sunday here on 94 WIP All Sports Radio. My name's Peter Solomon. My guest this morning, financial stock market investing expert Gary Stone. And now, Gary, I need you to stay with me, but I've got to run a few commercials so people around here can have enough money to invest. We'll be back in just a bit. The WIP time, 7:17. And we're back, and it's WIP Sunday. We're talking having a financially secure future in your old age with expert in this field, Gary Stone. Gary's got a new book. It talks a lot of it, that new book, Blueprint to Wealth, Financial Freedom in 15 Minutes a Week. My name's Peter Solomon. Okay, Gary, let's carry this through a little bit. Aunt Martha just died and left me a little bit of money, and I want to invest it. What do I do?
Okay, what I would suggest you do, and assuming, I'll make some assumptions, that you want to be near passive with it, which means you're not going to trade with it. You want to put it into, invest it somewhere where it's going to accumulate and compound and grow.
Absolutely.
So the two main reasons, is that what you want to say? So it's growth. So the other reason that people would, would want to invest is to deposit the money somewhere and either get dividends or interest, i.e. get income from that money. But if you want to, let's make the assumption you want to grow it, because I think that's what, you know, most people want to do until they get into retirement, and then it becomes more an income focus. But from a growth perspective, the stock market can be a minefield for people who don't know what they're doing. But the way of simplifying it all, where you can get the growth of the stock market, get the average of the growth of the stock market, is to invest it in the index. So the indices that we spoke about earlier, the Dow Jones, the S&P 500, and the NASDAQ index, the NASDAQ 100, are the three main indices. But there are some other indices. There's an S&P 400 index, which is the mid-cap index, and that's the next 400 stocks after the S&P 500. So you get the top 500, then you get the next 400, and those are called mid-cap stocks. And then you get the next 600, and those are called small-cap stocks. And if people can add up together, the 500, 400, and 600 is 1,500, and there's an S&P 1,500 index, which is more representative of the whole of the New York Stock Exchange. But the one in the research that I've done, and I'm not the only one, other people have done this research as well, and they've come up with the same sort of figures and numbers, is that the S&P 400, the mid-cap index, would give the best long-term growth for somebody who wants to achieve growth and get the best growth that's probably available through all investing avenues without putting in too much effort, but also removing the risk of investing in the stock market, where you could pick stocks that get delisted for all sorts of reasons. We had WorldCom delist. We've had a whole bunch of really big names, Enron, delisted. These are big stocks. So, and whilst it's a low probability, it can still happen, whereas the index cannot go to zero. You can't lose your money, all of your money. Now, just to put it to perspective, the S&P 400 over the last 20-odd years has performed including the reinvestment of dividends, as well as Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway company, where, you know, people have heard the story of Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett. So if you wanted to achieve the same growth as what Berkshire Hathaway, i.e. Warren Buffett, has done over the last 20-odd years, all you needed to have done was put your money into the S&P 400 index 20-odd years ago and reinvested the dividends that were paid every quarter and done that. And that would have taken people about an hour a year to do, and they would have been able to achieve the same returns as what Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway have been able to achieve.
So when you're investing in one of these funds, you're not investing in one single stock. You're investing in a group of stocks.
Correct, absolutely. And the way the index is managed, and this is what people have got to understand, is that obviously over the next 20 years, so they're not all going to be the same stocks. But the way the index is managed is that, let's take the S&P 500 as an example. If stock number 500 and 499 start going down, and their market capitalization starts getting smaller, then whenever they redo the index, those two stocks will fall off, and the S&P 500 will get another two new stocks in. So you can't be in stocks that go to zero, and stocks that fall out in the index and continue falling, you won't have those stocks in this diversified portfolio, if you like. So that is why an index is rigged to continue going up, because it always has the top 500 stocks by market capitalization. When I say go up, I don't mean in a straight line. It's going to go up and down, but in an upward slanting gradient. So the S&P 400 is just using that example, is you are invested across 400 stocks with a weighting based on the market capitalization. But that index, you're only buying one, let's call it stock in inverted commas, and you buy that on the stock market. It trades on the stock market, and every quarter when they pay dividends, you just buy more of that particular stock or index, which is, and I'll give you the code, the symbol in a moment if you want. So that's what you're doing. You actually got a diversified portfolio of stocks without having to do any stock picking, and one that outperforms active mutual funds.
But what if you're an investor who has some sense of social responsibility and you don't want to invest in someone that is an environmental polluter, for example? How does that work with
It doesn't. It does. Well, for investing in mainstream index ETFs, you're going to have problems because there will. I doubt very much if you're going to find that all those companies, you know, will meet your requirements, whatever they might be. But there are some mutual funds, but they're not mainstream indices, and their performance will obviously be determined by how well the stocks that make up that are invested in. But if you have those issues, then it's going to cause complications. There's no doubt, and that's just a matter of fact. That's just the way it is.
So if you want to make a lot of money, just as opposed to some money, give up any ideals you might have about where you want your money to be helping or not helping.
Correct, but you know there are other ways of doing that. You know, so if you do have that community responsibility, and I do talk about this in the book, is that people must work out their mission for their investing mission, if you like. So I talk about an investing plan, and I provide pretty detailed investment plans in the book. But every plan starts off with a mission statement. So you've got to work out why you're investing, and you've got to commit that to paper. You've got to think about it in some detail. And you know, part of why people invest for growth is to accumulate their wealth, to grow their wealth and accumulate it and accumulate a nest egg. But you know, if you accumulate your nest egg that's beyond what you need, then that surplus can be used to provide to wherever you want to avenues. You could give it away, you could put it into charities or whatever your bend is. So there are other ways of doing that rather than excluding growth companies from where you invest. You can invest in them, but then you can take the growth that you get out of that portfolio and give it away to people that need it more than you.
Okay. An interesting phenomenon happened to me. I, years ago, purchased some life insurance, which was mutualized. And then they demutualized my insurance policy, and it went into the stock market. And that scared me more because I didn't understand what was happening than anything else. Is that kind of a situation a problem, or it all depends on where they've put the money?
No, I wouldn't say it's a problem, but it, you know, it's one of the things that that people, that, you know, I'm not the only one who talks about, a lot of other people talk about, is that you shouldn't invest in something that you don't understand. So you know, if you find you're in that situation, then it's easier. You could sell that particular insurance company that's demutualized and listed on the stock exchange. You could sell out of that immediately because there's no vesting period for members of a demutualized insurance company, and you could then invest that directly into an exchange traded fund, and that way you then are investing in a broader section of stocks because you don't know how that insurance company is going to go in the long term. But, you know, it could delist because it's not performing well. It could whatever could happen to a single company, but you have that option of selling it and getting into an exchange traded fund.
Yeah. Okay. Another thing, in looking into investments for myself, one of the questions I've often been asked to think about is, how much risk am I willing to tolerate? Is that become an issue with your strategy?
It's actually one of the defining things that we go through in the book, is for people to try and define that. And effectively, investing in the stock market is perceived to be, and it probably is quite correct to be deemed so, one of the riskiest investment avenues open to people that are investing. But along with, and the reason that it's deemed risky is because of its volatility. And by volatility, I mean the potential for the stock market to go up or down in short periods of time by relatively larger amounts than other avenues for open to investors. But you know, that very volatility, and I talk quite a bit about this, it, rather than being afraid of it and fearing it, if people are trying to trade the market, that volatility makes it an extremely difficult caper. But over the long term, and I'm talking about 7 to 10 years and longer, that volatility should be embraced because it becomes your friend. Because of the volatility, it's an avenue that actually gets better returns than other investing avenues. So it's something that rather than fearing, people should embrace. And volatility and riskiness, if you like, or the risk of the stock market is something that the financial establishment, the financial elite, use as one of their tools to fearmonger and to get people to be afraid of the stock market and say, hey, come to us, you've got to use us. And what they talk about a lot is diversification. So you've got to diversify across different asset classes and within a particular asset class, because that diversification is a risk management strategy. And what I talk a lot about in the book is that diversification across different asset classes like bonds and fixed interest and maybe property, commercial property, and obviously the stock market, is a valid risk management strategy. But for periods, for investing horizons of anything from 1 to 7 years, maybe 10 years at a push, so when you're talking about for investment horizons that are longer than 10 years, and let's face it, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and even 50s are facing investment horizons of 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, then you shouldn't be diversifying. And this overdosing on diversification retards growth, and it actually strips away and makes people forfeit hundreds of thousands of dollars that they could potentially get through long-term compounding, because these active mutual funds have over-diversified and removed the potential to do better. So risk profile is something that people should try and understand, but the reality of it is that people don't know what their risk profile is, and they only really find out when they start becoming an investor. So how do you measure the riskiness, if you like, of a strategy? Well, it comes down to how much you are prepared to allow your portfolio or your investments to what we call retrace, to fall in value. And if you are following an active strategy, then that becomes quite a big thing that you need to know. But if you are buying and holding an index for the long term, you don't really need to know that. Because people, and I write about this in the book, is that the average time for an index to recover with the inclusion of dividends reinvested over the long term, the average is about 4.5 years. So if you know that your stocks or your index that you invest in isn't going to go to zero, and you understand from a big picture perspective that it's a volatile environment and your index, your ETF, could drop by 40-50%, then this continuing to hold it and buy more actually becomes a very liberated strategy, because you know it's not going to go to zero and it's going to recover on average within 4.5 years. So if you understand that, then this whole investing caper in the stock market becomes a lot easier, because you know you're never going to have to be a forced seller at the bottom of a big bear market. Does that make sense?
I think so. You're certainly giving us a lot to think about. And it's commercial time again, unfortunately, Gary Stone, or fortunately, because it pays the bills here at 94 WIP. So you stay with us, and we'll be back in just a bit. The WIP time, 7:36. And we're back and into the home stretch here on WIP Sunday with financial expert Gary Stone. We're talking investment for a secure future and a whole lot more. My name's Peter Solomon. Gary, I get these messages on my computer screen, just like I'm not sure where they come from. And I think they say Warren Buffett, but I wouldn't swear to it, saying, get out of the stock market, put all your money in gold. I mean, if it's not Mr. Buffett, it's somebody of equal prestige on the surface. Should we be taking our money out of the stock market and putting it in gold?
Well, I mean, I'm not in the game of predicting where different markets are going to go in the short term, but certainly, one of the things that detracts people from their plan and from a strategy they may be using is what I call all the noise. There's so much noise around on our TVs and newspapers, coming into our email inboxes all over the place. People have got opinions on what's going to happen in the short term. And in reality, nobody knows what's going to happen in the short or even the medium or the long term with any certainty, with any degree of certainty. But certainly in the long term, we have evidence for hundreds of years now that stock market continues to rise. And I guess the one main basic precedent as to whether that will continue to happen well into the future is whether capitalism survives, I guess, because that's probably the only thing that's going to you know, make the stock market continue to go down forever and ever and ever. I mean, it's had the 1930s depression, obviously preceded by the 1929 stock market crash. It's had really bad periods. 2008 was a pretty bad period. 1987 is a pretty bad period. So it's had pretty bad things thrown at it. It's had 9/11 thrown at it. But no matter what you throw at it, it continues in the long term to rise. Individual stocks don't, though. I mean, you could take Eastman Kodak, which was a Dow 30 component for decades and decades, doesn't exist anymore. So there's going to be disruption of individual stocks. There's going to be stocks that aren't even listed on the stock exchange now that in 10 years' time could be another Facebook or whatever, and could be in the top 50 stocks by market capitalization. And without knowing what's going to happen, in the individual stocks and that, what investing in the index does is it removes all the pressure and tension and everything that goes around trying to be in the latest stock and trying to predict which ones are going to go up and which ones to stay away from. And we know that in the long term, the stock market, with dividends reinvested, continues to rise and rise and rise. Certainly not in a straight line, but it's not going to go to zero. So the longer the term you invest, the greater the certainty is that you are going to make returns, positive returns. You can't say the same for other investing avenues in terms of getting best returns. So investing in individual stocks, very tough gig. Investing in an index makes it so much easier. It takes away all this pressure to go and be in the latest fad and to stay away from stocks that may not be around. So there is some certainty in the long term, certainly.
Because the other expression I often heard is the question of widows and orphans stocks. Stocks that are a quote-unquote sure thing. Is there such a thing as a sure thing?
There's, in terms of an individual stock, no. I mean, we just, what people have got to subscribe to that in the first instance is that anything can happen. And nobody knows for sure what's going to happen in the future. There's no doubt about it. Now, I don't even know for sure that capitalism is going to survive within mine or my children's investing lifetime. I don't know that for sure. But I do know there's a pretty high probability that it's going to continue to survive. And if it does, that the stock market is going to continue to rise in the long term. But to try and pick a single stock or five or six or seven or ten stocks for the long term that continue to rise is a low probability, long-term bet. Whereas a high probability bet that you're going to make a profit over the long term is to invest in the index, because it's rigged to go up by continuing to have the larger stocks that are components of the index.
How do you begin to choose which index you want to invest in?
That's a great question. The research that I've done in my book shows that, and we can only go on history because we can't go on the future. We don't know what the future holds. And by looking at history, of course, there is no dead cert that what's going to happen in the past is going to happen in the future. But it gives us probabilities, high probabilities of what's going to happen in the future. And over the long term, there's data out now that tracks back to for indices, for sector indices and mainstream indices, going back to 1926, that shows that the two best performing indices over the long term have been the S&P 600, which is the small cap index, and the S&P 400, which is the mid cap index. So if we want to play with the probabilities, which is really what everything in life is about, because there's no dead certs, there's only probabilities. That the highest probability of getting the best returns going into the next 10, 20, 30 years is to invest in the mid-cap index, and they're the ones that eventually do become, those stocks do eventually, that continue to grow, find their way into the S&P 500, which is the large-cap index, is to invest in those mid-cap because they get more growth than any of the other indices. And that's, if you want to take a probability bet on getting growth, that's the way to go, in the mid-cap index.
Okay. And again, to sort of begin to sum up, you think we should be doing this stuff on our own, or should we go get some help?
Well, you know, I would like to think that if people read my book, Blueprint to Wealth, and read a few other books and you know, did some research on the internet by verifying that what I've written in the book is correct, then they would be able to do it on their own without having to go via a broker or anybody else. So the S&P 400 you can do on your own, and you can go to broker dealers like Fidelity, I think, is one. First Trade is another, I think, and you can buy the S&P 400 ETF, which is its symbol or ticker code is Indigo Juliet Hotel. That's IJH, India Juliet Hotel, and you can buy that through those broker dealers for $0. You can reinvest the dividends, and you can also through an IRA and an independent retirement account, you can set that up, and you can take your retirement contributions, if you like, and every 3 or 4 months, which really is the 15 minutes a quarter, you can buy some more of IJH and continue to accumulate and allow the magic of Albert Einstein called the eighth wonder of the world, to allow compounding, the magic of compounding, to work in your favor in a very, very low fee environment. So we haven't even spoken about fees, which we can talk about if there's time as well.
Okay, let's talk about fees. Go ahead. What do we need to know?
IJH is the index ETF. I think they've iShares have just reduced the annual management fee to 0.04% per annum. Compare that to even Vanguard, which is around 0.2% compounded per annum for its active mutual funds or its balanced funds, and compare that to the average active mutual fund of being somewhere between 0.75% and 1.2% per annum. So when you're talking about paying a whole 1% per annum extra in fees, the amount of forfeited growth that can happen in the long term is hundreds of thousands of dollars just for 1% compounded per annum. So investing, not only are we talking about through investing in a stock market index getting the best growth, we're also doing so at the lowest possible fees that can be paid. And the combination of both of those is what gets this massive outperformance of other investing avenues that are open to everyday investors.
And I'd like to say thank you to Gary Stone. Gary, one more time, the name of your book?
The name of the book is Blueprint to Wealth, and there is a website, and you know, no surprises there. It's blueprinttowealth.com, and all one word, and people can go off to Amazon or Kindle or Book Depository or whichever people they prefer to buy through. There's a Kindle version. There's also other ebook versions available from there. And one of the things that we do on the website is we actually track a live real money portfolio that uses one of the strategies in the book to see how well that's outperforming, how much it's outperforming the S&P 500 by and also a Vanguard a balanced fund, just to show the outperformance, and people can track that on a month-by-month basis.
And again, thank you, Gary Stone. It's been instructive.
It's been a pleasure, Peter.
Thank you. And it's been another edition of WIP Sunday here on 94 WIPO Sports Radio. My name's Peter Solomon. Thank you to Phil Jackson, this morning's producer, and to Ann Tideman Solomon, my dear wife and associate producer. Couldn't do the show without either one of you. You make it all possible. Stay tuned for Sports Talk with Sonny Hill. Always interesting and provocative discussion in the living room. Your opinions, Sonny's reactions. I know I'll be listening. Take 94 WIPO Sports Radio with you no matter where you go, because as cold as it is, you always need access to hot conversation. Nothing left to say, but see you soon.